Welcome to the podcast hosted by the Association of Celtic Students, in which we discuss the Celtic languages, cultures, and their study with various guests. Today's episode is in English and Cornish. Enjoy. Dinach then podcast, Ostiasgans Coetha Studiorion Celtic, in Pile, near Vadal, a draw and yethel, Hagonis Ogethel Celtic, Hagas Studians, Gans Westorian de Fans. And Dowlin has you, Yun Sausnek, had Knuick, Omloen Hay. Ken's a broadhurst, you or Hanel. Mia Stews, Ragal Doctorias, Infundian Studians or Knuick, Rana Benskill Garesk. Head you, Mira Kausel Gans Edward Rowe, Gwaria, Scrifa, Hagesia, Inkeva, Ioba, Taulo, Evera, Hapith Uzian, Gonevenu, Lotho, Ragan Media, Inkerno, are the. My name is Kenza Broadhurst. I'm a PhD student at the Institute of Cornish Studies, part of Exeter University. Today, I'm going to be speaking to Edward Rowe, a Cornish writer and actor who is well known in Cornwall and beyond for his comedy work as Curno King. In recent years, Ed has been seen on TV in programmes such as Beyond Paradise, Strike, Alex Rider and House of the Dragon. As well as appearing in several short films in Cornish, Ed played Martin, the main character, in Mark Jenkins' BAFTA-winning film Bait, and can currently be seen in Jenkins' latest feature film, Ennis Men. More recently, Ed has turned to film production and direction himself, and his short film, Mab Hoodle, was released last year. Hello, Ed, and thank you for agreeing to be interviewed for the show.
Pleasure.
Dinach, Fatlagenis.
Splam, Maraz, Hati.
Dalarov, Ms. Ninji Dan Gua had you in Kerno.
Oh, drug you.
Drug you.
Maguire. In Aberfala, who per drug.
Glib. You think you and Cameron in West.
Yeah.
So, you are a Cornish speaker. What's the importance of the Cornish language to you? Why did you start learning?
I started learning a few years ago, but very half-heartedly. I was going to a class pre-COVID, way pre-COVID, in a cafe, but I wasn't a very good student, I don't think. I just wasn't really listening or paying attention, you know, just wasn't quite there with it. And then I sort of didn't really do anything for a few years, and then I did a short film in Cornish, Moes by Briar Flanders, which is on the BBC iPlayer. And there was a couple of scenes that I just couldn't do in Cornish, and I was getting really teasing because I couldn't do it. And eventually I did it, but it was a lot of takes later. And I just left feeling a bit mortified that I call myself the Curno King and I'm not very good at speaking Cornish. So from that day forth, I made it my ambition, my passion, my dream to be a Cornish language speaker. And in COVID, I signed up to a class with Mark Trevethan, our Cornish language guru, and I've kept going. So I do a class now online every Wednesday. I did one-to-one lessons with Mark for ages, and then was like, I think, you know, it'd be better for me to be with other people. Perhaps Mark suggested that, actually. So I joined a class. So I did my grade one in like 2017, scraped it, then joined a class after learning for a couple of years with Mark that was coming to the end of their grade one. So kind of recapped, and now we're all up to the same point, really.
Yeah.
And starting our grade two. And Wednesday night, I joined a grade three conversational class. So that was really good fun as well.
Excellent. Yeah, because even just listening, you pick stuff up and
and also you have to push yourself. You have to, if you can talk with people that are better at speaking Cornish than you, and Cornish language speakers are really generous people, you know, it's never about one-upmanship or anything like that. So when you're speaking with people that speak better than you, you do get pulled up quite quickly.
Yeah. Although, and I think also people are generous. Like my absolute beginners class, we had our last lesson on Wednesday, and I introduced them to the idea of mutations, having sort of kept them well away from it all term, not to scare them and put them off. Yeah. And you know, one of the things I said was, actually, everyone's gone through this pain. So everyone will, you know, if you're talking to somebody who's a fluent speaker, they'll go, okay, actually that should be that, but they're not going to go, oh, look at you, you can't do mutations. And yeah, like you're saying.
Yeah.
I was wondering actually, just to pick up on a point from that, when you've done short, I mean, the short films on BBC iPlayer, let's plug that, are great. And they are all in, one of them's got a little bit of English, but they're all in Cornish. What do you find? Do you find actually you are the only Cornish speaker, or are the others, other actors learning, picking Cornish up? Or
I think the collection of short films that are on, that have been made with the Film K Fund through Screen Cornwall and Cornwall Council, there are actors now that are out there learning Cornish. I don't think, I could be wrong, but I don't think anybody spoke Cornish much. But when I made my film, Mabhoodle, what I did was I gave everyone a contracted 8 hours of Cornish lessons.
Nice.
So I taught them an hour every once or twice a week in the build-up to rehearsals, which was the best thing I could have done. And it just happened to be that the two leads, you know, we audition people, and the two leads are Welsh.
Mm.
So they had a natural ability with Cornish, of Cornish language. In fact, Chris Jenkins, the lead, who plays Ennis, he isn't or wasn't a fluent Welsh speaker, a fluent Welsh speaker, but he since went on and is learning Welsh and has become really, really brilliant at speaking Welsh.
Yeah, that's really good. Maybe one day we'll get to that. You know how actors sort of, you know, have things like sword fighting and horse riding on their CVs? Maybe one day we'll get to the point where Cornish speaker is...
Oh, yeah, I don't think that's far off.
Really?
Yeah, I think I've got it on my CV.
Excellent, that's really cool.
Yeah. I think with what's going on in the film world in Cornwall, as people are, you know, if I was a young graduate actor, I'd be learning Cornish with a view to getting jobs in speaking Cornish, because Film K is not going anywhere. I think, you know, every year there's going to be a new Cornish language short.
And I certainly, even I, and I have nothing to do with this world whatsoever, I'm seeing casting calls coming through on Facebook for Cornish, not necessarily Cornish speakers, but people who have Cornish accents, can speak Cornish dialect, you know, are, you know, just by their sort of physical appearance are evidently Cornish. So it does seem to be coming more and more of a trend. Maybe that's the influence of Falmouth University, I don't know, in their film
school. Yeah, maybe. I mean, a lot of stuff is made down here, and you know, quite often Cornish actors aren't cast in it, and you know, there'll be there's a lot of ropey accents and but I think it's getting better.
Yeah, definitely. So let's think about Mabhoodle, which I finally saw earlier this year and is amazing. Why did you decide to write it and produce it in Cornish?
I think I like hearing people that and seeing people that don't normally speak Cornish speaking Cornish.
Mm.
So for me, rugby players and farmers.
Yeah.
I just thought that was a great setup, just to see rugby players and farmers speaking Cornish. Ironically, probably farmers do speak a bit of Cornish with addresses and farm names without necessarily realizing it. But I'd say most, you know, it's probably not many rugby players that are speaking Cornish. So I thought to see on film rugby players speaking Cornish whilst playing rugby would be a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, I think it is. And when we, you know, when we're shooting the film, St. Just Rugby Club came up to be the opposing team. You know, they sent up our 8 lads. It was unreal that, you know, they took days off work to come and be our rugby team. And we were just throwing Cornish bits at them to chuck into the film. So if they were calling for the ball, they'd be, Oma, Oma.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of stuff was just amazing. And they really took it on board.
And I guess rugby players are sort of into that, because they're used to having to do completely weird calls for lineouts and things.
Yeah, you know, so. They are. They could easily do Cornish language lineout calls, and no one would know, really.
Exactly. Nobody would know. Like, you know, it's not like playing France and everyone's done a bit of schoolboy French. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, and I was just thinking, actually, my dad sings in Four Lanes Male Voice Choir. And he was actually just talking, they had a concert earlier in the week, and he was just talking about how most of the choir are ancient farmers.
Really?
They're actually, you know, maybe they do speak a bit of Cornish, quite cultured Cornish farmers.
You do see, you know, Cornish, you know, I went up to a mate's farm yesterday, it's Trasamble, and the tray is obviously the Cornish word for home, and
yeah,
you know, there's lots of it. There's probably a bit of dialect and language interspersed into field names or place names or equipment, and same with fishing, I guess.
So I obviously came, you know, we had a chat earlier in the year, I came to see Mab Hoodle, and you put it on as part of a sort of comedy night.
Yeah.
So you did your sketches and we had sketches from the others. Most people in Cornwall are used to seeing you as the Kerno King persona. So what's the audience reaction been to actually coming to a comedy night but seeing a short film in Cornish?
It's been really good. It's been really, really good. I mean, it's definitely a bit weird. You go from, you know, three comics, me,
yeah,
Emily and Anna Curl, talking about, you know, things that stand-up comics talk about, like
yeah,
Anna talks about some pretty adult things,
yes, being a woman, yeah, yeah,
which are really funny. And same with Mimi. Mimi's got this lovely...
All her songs, yeah.
All her songs, and she's, you know, like a princess, but then she's quite scathing and cutting, and
yeah,
and then me doing what I do. So you do build up this a great night of comedy, then you kind of go, oh, now we're going to watch a tragic little gay rugby farming love story.
Yeah.
Not tragic, but, you know, quite a heartfelt
gay
rugby farming love story. So it's there's been a couple of times where you can feel the crowbar literally wedged in between the comedy and the film, but not in a bad way, just...
Mm.
So after a couple of those, I said, you know, at the beginning, like, set up the night, you know, we've got three comics in the film. I was like, it's a little bit weird because it goes from comedy to a heartfelt film, but stick with it, and it, you know, it does work. So it's been amazing, amazing.
And are you... what's the audience reaction? You know, you do bits of Cornish in your... comedy shows. So what's the audience reaction to that? Do people know the Cornish? Are people interested?
They're definitely interested. Sometimes they know. And there's not many people that know too much, but people always want to know more.
Yeah.
People always want to learn a bit more about speaking Cornish. And I always say the gateway drug into Cornish language is place names.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's so many...
We see them every day.
Yeah, we see them every day.
Yeah.
And then I've got a book upstairs from the library recently, you know, and I grab that and look up something the other day, like Venton. You know, we all laugh at Venton gimps.
Yeah.
But Venton is like an unwalled field or Fenton. Yeah. So, you know, that you just read that and you're like, oh my goodness, this is why that's called that. And another one the other day, yesterday, we've got a... Where I live in Budok, we've got a road down the end. It's called Krill Corner, which is in Cornish, it's Cornell Krill. And Cornell, that's the word for the Cornish word for a small corner.
Okay.
You know, I didn't know that until a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just fascinating.
And I just like that, you know, if you look at these place names and they haven't changed for 1,000 years, if not more. And that just that absolute connection with our ancestors, that they saw that same view and just called it like Deep Valley or
Nance or Glynn.
That's
what I love about speaking Cornish. It makes you feel so rooted in where you're from.
Yeah,
that it just makes me feel even more part, like, I don't know how to explain it. You're part of the fabric of Cornwall when you're speaking the language.
Yeah.
And place names, and, you know, like Nanpean, you know, is Nan's Behan in Cornish, which is a small valley, and you kind of go, oh yeah, it is a small valley.
It is a small valley, yeah.
And like, you know, Brown Willy, why on earth are we calling it Brown Willy and not Bron Welles?
Yeah.
Brow shaped hill with swallows, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, now that the Welsh are renaming everything back into Welsh, why shouldn't we? Exactly.
I know. We absolutely should. We should have everything in Cornish and then English on signs. It'd just be fantastic.
Yeah. And like in Ireland with the different fonts. And
Yeah.
So we've talked about the importance of Cornish. The Cornish film industry, I think in recent years, has suddenly really taken off. And I know this is a conversation you and I have had before, and both of us have had with other people, about the problem of, in recent years, the tale of Cornwall has been told by others, and those people tend to have nothing to do with Cornwall and just project an image of Cornwall. So do you think that the growth of the Cornish film sector has happened as a reaction to that, or was it happening anyway, or, you know, why is it having so much success?
I think it's always been there, the Cornish film industry. It's been quite small, but it's always been growing, and I think it's just grown quicker lately because of some films that people are making, because of the university is doing an amazing job with the School of Film and Television. You've got people like Laura Canning up there that runs a show, and you know, they're just making things happen, not just for students but local filmmakers as well, with their support through Film K. Obviously Bait had made a massive splash in the world of film, not just in Cornish film but globally. And then, you know, Brett Harvey and Cy Harvey's film Long Way Back was well received and did a lot of business. And then, of course, Ennismain came along as well. So, and that's led to, you know, like big support from the likes of the BFI, who are, you know, backing Mark. And they do lots of other things. We're backing some short filmmakers as well down here. Appreciate the names I've said so far are all men. They're all male filmmakers, but there's also an incredible collection of women filmmakers down here as well. There are Edie Moles from the unis doing incredible things. There's some fantastic producers. Ella, who produced, she works on lots of short films. She worked on Ennismain. You've got Denzel with Bazena, who's employing some amazing graduates. So there's just this big ripple of Cornish film that's getting further and further, really, into the psyche, not just in the UK, but beyond.
I was going to ask you about that, because obviously, you know, living in Cornwall, knowing what the issues are in Cornwall, you know, I think for us, Bait was such an important film because it showed our side of the equation. But you must have gone around, certainly Europe, with Bait when it was doing the festival scene. How was it received in other countries?
That was unreal. It was absolutely unreal. I think the premiere, I'd watched the film.
Wasn't it in Berlin or something?
It was in Berlin, yeah. So I'd watched the film in Newlyn Film House with the cast and crew. And everyone sort of sat in silence through it because I guess we'd all worked on the film, so we were intrigued to see what the film was. So we sort of sat in silence and it was hard to judge.
Yeah.
But then when we got to Berlin, I went as well, and the premiere was unbelievable. We were in a huge Art Deco cinema that sat like 900 people. It was sold out. And quite quickly, the audience started laughing. You know, everyone was German speakers. The subtitles were on screen, but, you know, the Germans speak English super well. So quite quickly, we were like, I was stunned at how many people were laughing. They were laughing at jokes that were almost trampling on lines that were later.
Yeah.
I don't think we ever saw Bait as being particularly funny, but there's the line that looks a bit like a sex dungeon about the second home.
Yeah.
Like it brought the house down. It was insane. And then from there on in, I did a few festivals in the UK and in Europe, like Luxembourg, and everyone just loved it because it not only is it a beautiful film to look at, and it's beautifully written and beautifully shot and all the rest of it, but it's also a universal tale of people being bought out of and pushed out of their communities because they can't afford to stay there anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and it's probably we shot Bait in 2017, came out in 2019, and it's probably worse than ever now.
Yeah.
In terms of rentals and then interest rates, you know, it's getting worse and worse and worse. So, yeah, it was that universal story that was really well loved and enjoyed by audiences all over. And you know you read the reviews, it's got 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's one of the only films to have.
Oh, really?
Yeah, 100%. It's insane.
But that's amazing.
It's just it just did so well and still rumbles on. And then it's just had a DVD release in America with Ennismain as well. And it's fascinating to see how a little you know, what we thought was a little Cornish film become a global thing. Yeah. But people say to me all the time, with like my stand-up, but they always say to me, oh, that was really funny, but how does it go down outside of Cornwall? You know, it used to really annoy me and still does.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, you do realize like gazillions of people come to Cornwall every year. Gazillions of people watch it on telly. Gazillions of people watch films in Cornwall. They know we exist. They know Cornwall's a bit different. They know we've got a different culture. People love it.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, we've just had the Radio 4 comedy show. What have the reviews for that been like? I mean, that's very, very much based in Cornish everyday culture.
It has, yeah. I mean, the reviews for that have been great. I mean, it's definitely a Radio 4 audience that love it.
Yeah.
Which is great. And the reviews of that have been fantastic. And there's lots of reviews, people complaining about the way we mock certain visitors.
Yeah.
And second homeowners. But the visitors want, you know, we all love being a holidaymaker, but we all know that when we're a holidaymaker, we're going to be a little bit of an annoyance to the locals.
Exactly.
But that doesn't mean you're not liked.
Yeah.
But you know, some people took that bad. And it wasn't cutting or anything. Lots of second home owner bashing, which I'm all for, to be honest. There was a great, I played a character, I can't remember the character's name, Ray Hardman.
Yes.
And he delves into the world of second homeowners. So he's like Grant Mitchell, Phil Mitchell, whoever it is. He's like, right, we're going to go into second homeowners' houses and see the terrible lives they live.
Yeah.
And, you know, that sort of stuff, just turning on its head a little bit is a winner for me. And people really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And the producer, Simon, was fantastic at just kind of saying to people, write what you want. And we wrote tons and tons and tons of material, and there's tons left over. And it was just, you know, unashamedly Cornish, really.
Yeah, definitely. It's interesting. I was thinking about that. I was in Venice a couple of weeks ago working. And I mean, I lived there a long time ago when I was first a postgrad student. And it's the same issue again, you know. Venetians are being pushed out of the historic city because it's been turning into Airbnbs. There's so much potential for a sort of Cornwall-Venice crossover research.
Yeah.
You just see exactly the same issues as we have here.
Yeah, tragic, isn't it?
So Bait really launched Mark Jenkin into the sort of public consciousness and the sort of film world consciousness. So do you think that's given him a certain amount of freedom to make Ennis Main and... You know, do you think that and then like the importance of having a title in Cornish, do you think he might increase the amount of Cornish that he does, or what do you reckon?
I mean, I couldn't speak for Mark in terms of what he's going to do next, but I wouldn't be surprised if that's what he does. I hope that's what he does, because he is just brilliant. He's just, you know, as well as being a mate, he's just an unbelievable filmmaker that I
really
love.
Really original, yeah.
Oh, yeah. But in terms of his freedom, Mark's always going to be free.
Mm.
That is what is truly amazing about Mark, is that he will not stop being Mark Jenkin and making the films he wants to make. Whether he doesn't make a penny for 10 years, but makes another film that
is exactly what
maybe bombs or doesn't bomb, he's going to make what he wants to make, because he's got that creative freedom. It's truly inspiring to see, because he's... You know, he's just got this vision of what he wants to make, and what he makes is just beautiful films. And he's been making films maybe all his life, or certainly since he was young in photography. Yeah. He is an absolute film nerd. I don't know anyone like it. He's just so passionate about film. We share a love for a film called Big Wednesday.
Oh, the surfing one.
Yeah, the surfing one. It's my favorite film. It's probably in Mark's top five, I'd say.
Mm.
But again, like, I thought I know a new Big Wednesday, but it's, you know, he found a book the other day and he's like, check this out, found the Big Wednesday book. It's got bits of the script in, and it's the fiction of the film, the story of the film. And, you know, again, he picks up loads. He's got a different ending. And, you know, I read the ending. Mark was like, it's got a different ending. Let me know what you think. And I just replied, I love the different ending.
Mm.
And then Mark's reply was like that long on WhatsApp, you know, just getting longer. But it's just absolutely fascinating. And you're like, yeah, that's why I love it. So And he's just so generous and funny and a brilliant speaker about his films and other films. Yeah, he's just a genuine, unique talent.
And do you think that because he is that sort of trailblazer, that has given all the other people that we've talked about who are coming through in Cornwall the confidence to start telling our own story rather than the sort of what Julie Scantbury on Radio Cornwall calls the Cornwall porn that we normally see on TV?
I think everyone has got, you know, a lot of the people out there have been making this kind of stuff for years, like Cy Harvey, you know, he's an Olivier Award-winning theatre director, Brett, his brother, filmmaker, Knee High, Emma Rice. You know, these people have been around, Jack Morrison at Feast.
Yeah.
These people have been in Anna Marie Murphy, Maria Murphy, you know, just one of the best writers around. These people have all been around making the stuff they want to make for years. Yeah. And arguably the theatre stuff has been in that world is recognized as bait. The stuff that Knee High were doing, that Cy's done, that Emma Rice has done, has been, you know, it's made as big a waves as bait in the theatre world. I know for me, you know, I thought I was someone that, you know, I like writing theatre shows and being in theatre shows and doing the stand-up shows. But I think Mab Hoodle, you know, I just happened to write because it was an idea from playing rugby and working with two gay rugby players, Gareth Thomas and a local lad. And I was like, I want to write a story around this, a short film. And I did that a few years ago, and it just was in my computer, sat there, and then put it in for a funding application and won some money and then raised some more money. But I think after that, with the way Ennismain is, you know, I'm definitely inspired by Mark's film work to make and write stories about my Cornish life. Because, you know, my Cornish life is in Mid Cornwall, in Roche, surrounded by the clay tips. My dad, my brother, my granddad, they all worked in the clay tips.
Mm.
And, you know, that's the story I want to tell. And what's exciting about that is, you know, Mark's told a story in Bait, you know, about fishermen.
Mm.
You know, there's gazillions of stories and TV shows about miners, but
there's coal miners.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot about tin miners, pole dark, but, you know, no one's really covered or featured clay mining to an extent. So I've written a short film in Cornish that about a clay mining community, but I want to, and that we've got some funding applications in at the moment. So if we get some money, we'll make that probably next year. But I definitely want to make a Cornish language feature in the world of Mid Cornwall. And last night I saw a show by a chap called Tommy Jackson Greaves, who's an amazing choreographer and dancer and theatre maker and an actor. And, you know, it's about his relationship between sexuality, clay mining and Cornwall.
Mm-hmm.
And it was unbelievable. And what was exciting for me, I was like, I haven't seen many people talk about the clay tips on stage.
No.
We sort of miss that. And I grew up with that, you know, people taking the mick out of me because I came from Roche. It was always seen as a bit of a shithole, probably because of the clay tips. And, you know, when I was young, my first girlfriend, I was like 17, 18, my first girlfriend lived in St. Maur's. And, you know, my parents were like, St. Maur's?
Yeah.
You know, it was brilliant. And that sort of world still excites me. And I think it's an interesting world to set stuff.
Yeah. I really liked one of the other short films on BBC iPlayer is And Tarot, which I may be being completely wrong here, but it seems to have been filmed on the edge of Camborne where I live. And it's just, seeing where you live on screen, you know, there's something so important about that. And feeling represented. So I was going to ask you, you know, talking about film funding, I was in Carmarthen a couple of weeks ago at a conference, and one day was hosted at the S4C Centre. Their big sort of main centre is in Carmarthen. And so we had talks from the CEO of S4C and so on. So do you think that the growing number and the visibility of minority language productions, so that, you know, there's a lot more Welsh on the BBC, there's a lot more Welsh on Netflix, do you think that will help smooth the way for Cornish language productions to get funding and just sort of, you know, grow, become more visible?
I don't know. I don't know if that will help. I would hope so, but you would think it might, but
yeah,
it's hard to know with this current government and what funding's available. And
yeah,
I would hope so. I really would. You know, I know there's lots of work behind the scenes at the minute for a Cornish language channel.
Yeah.
There's stuff going on there, but I think it's a real slog for people. It's just not easy.
Right.
I'm quite fortunate that I guess because of the back of brand Kerno King and doing Christmas shows at the Hall for Cornwall, you know, I've got a really loyal local large following that will help me raise money to make something. Or I can go to businesses that will contribute.
Yeah.
Crowd funders. So it's interesting. But I honestly don't know if it would help. I certainly hope it would.
Yeah. If you had a blank piece of paper, what would be your vision for Cornish language media?
What, like a TV channel or?
Whatever you want.
Well, there's quite a lot of stuff out there already. There's various publications, there's new stuff in Cornish. Matthew Abdui does his Cornish channels.
Mm.
So there's quite a lot out there, but I guess it would be fun. I mean, I learned a lot of Cornish from my short film, weirdly, and the short films, other people's short films, I've been like Antaro and Moez. So it really helps you to learn when you're just absorbing Cornish language. You start to hear phrases repeated.
Yeah.
You start to make sense of things. So I guess I would like to see, you know, even if you had a channel, a BBC iPlayer channel or a channel on Freeview that was Cornish language, and you just had lots of stuff for various abilities. Maybe it taught you a bit of Cornish.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I remember the lovely chap who sadly passed away, Stephen Gainey. He did stuff that was brilliant. I think it might have even been on a DVD, and he was an actor in that. And, you know, I learned a lot from watching those. So I guess I would like to see a channel, maybe some of that you could feature short films, short content, maybe a chat show, maybe a quiz, anything in Cornish that you see on like ITV between 9 a.m. and 9 p.m.
Yeah.
Maybe like a Coronation Street version, Pendarvis Hill or something. And I mean, imagine a Cornish language sitcom or something.
It'd be brilliant. Everyone moaning about the seagulls. So I'm going to completely change the subject now. One of the other things that you do is actually a load of educational material for primary schools in the main, as part of a series called Cornish Caretakers. So I was wondering if you could just tell us a little bit about that.
So, the Cornish Caretakers is a really interesting little sub-brand of my business or my work, in inverted commas, because a few years ago, Crescent Kerno commissioned us to come up with something, or I came up with the Cornish Caretakers, and we essentially look after Cornish history and Cornish heritage. So when we do our shows, we bring to life Cornish history. So, for example, the first one was all about famous men and women of Cornwall.
Yeah.
So it's for children, obviously, primary age children. And that show, the premise was we take a box into school, a treasure chest, essentially, from Crescent Kerno that's full of exciting bits from Crescent Kerno that we're going to show the children. But my character, who's pro-Cornish and slightly hapless, has brought the wrong box.
Okay.
And there's a sign on it that's the wrong way around. We turn it around, it says the wrong box. So we're like Mr. Roder Rover Scholar, and the other actor at that time was Jenny Bear, who plays Mrs. Penrose Pengilly Penworth. We're like, what are we going to do? We've got 400 children. How are we going to entertain them?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I tell you what, I'll get the lost property box and see what's in it. So we preset a lost property box, drag it out. Inside it is a boxing glove. I put it on, I become Bob Fitzsimmons. There's a first aid kit. We use that. Jen becomes Emily Hobhouse.
Yeah.
There's a little action figure and a beer barrel. It's Bobby Leach who went over Niagara Falls.
Yeah.
So on and so forth. All the while the box is kind of vibrating and glowing. We find, I can't remember how, but we find out that inside it, oh no, we just open it, and inside it is the world's oldest pasty. So we looked it out. The kids' minds are blown. We don't realize it's the world's oldest pasty until I've eaten it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's basically it. We bring to life Cornish history and heritage, and we've done that with famous men and women. We've done it with mining. We did it for P.K. Porthcurno, and we did a show about communications, which was actually really good fun, and the children learned a song throughout the show.
Yeah.
And then the fourth one with the library service is a history of Cornwall. So it's not the history of Cornwall, it's a history of Cornwall.
Yeah.
So we cover, and we always cover Cornish language, actually, I should say, as well. We feature Dolly Pentreath, because she's just so brilliant for delivering the Cornish for the kids. She's a little old lady with a scarf and a handbag and a walking stick.
Yeah.
She teaches the children Cornish. And at the minute, a history of Cornwall was funded by the library service. We did it in libraries. We normally do it in schools, but we did it in libraries. Children come to libraries, watch the show. They register for a new free library card.
Yeah.
That entitles them to come back in the summer holidays for a manga illustrated version of the Cornish Caretaker's History of Cornwall book, illustrated by Keith Sparrow and written by me. And it's just a great book of the show with loads more bits, loads more scenes from Cornish history. And then I always do a workshop prior to the show, and I always encourage the children to talk about their Cornish history. And before you know it, they've remembered that, you know, their granddad's a fisherman. You know, they've got an ancient line of fishermen in their family. Or, you know, they don't, you're like, what do we mine in Cornwall? And they're like, what do you mean mine? And I'm like, what's that building out there? And they're like, oh my goodness, it's an engine house, tin and copper.
Yeah.
China clay. And so it just encouraged them to talk about their Cornish history and identity. It doesn't matter where they're from. It doesn't matter if they've been in Cornwall for a year or 10 years. You know, they've all got something to say. And then part of the workshop is I'll play a board game I've invented called, I've always done these, but this one's called Curno, and it's a race through Cornish history and facts to the centre of Cornwall, which is, of course, Roach Rock.
Yeah.
And first one back wins. Whoever remembers the most facts as well from the game wins a prize. So, that's basically what we do.
Education for primary school, you know, sort of shows such as this and the fact that we do now have a Cornish language programme for primary schools are really good. But, you know, your children have left school now, and you obviously went to school in Cornwall as well. What do you think about the importance of educating children in Cornwall about Cornwall and the fact that it just doesn't happen in our curriculum?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I covered a single bit of Cornish history at school ever. I can't remember ever doing anything about Cornish history. You know, I went to school in Roach, next door to Roach Rock.
Yeah.
I mean, it's only, this is mad, but about 2 months ago, the sign to Roach Rock was uncovered. And I found out when I read it that it's not even granite. It's not granite.
Is it not?
No.
Oh.
It's made up of all these other minerals and it's not granite, which I was like, what? So anyway, keep learning. That's the main thing.
Yeah.
No harm in still learning. But yeah, it's pretty bonkers. Some schools are very proactive in learning a bit of Cornish. Some schools, a lot of schools have Cornish weeks where they do Cornish history and heritage. And quite often they'll ask me in or come to the caretaker shows as a way of launching their Cornish week. St. Mary Dock School in Camborne, they've, you know, got dual signage around the school in Cornish and English.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you go into schools, what you do notice is that the schools have got a lot to deal with already. They've got a curriculum that's pretty tight. They've got, if they want to crowbar stuff in, they can and they do. You know, I find it quite interesting that whoever it is at the government says you need a sign on every school hall has to have a bit of wall that says British values. And it just covers British values. You know, some of them got Churchill up there.
Mm.
But, you know, it's absolute bollocks, to be honest. So
you've got a school that's got 80%, say, of children who don't have English as a first language.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's shameful. It's weird. I mean, that's not the school's fault. They've got to do that. Exactly. But what you do notice with the schools, and I've been to probably I've been to 70% of the schools with our shows over the years, because we do one or two a year. But what you do notice is how amazing the staff are, you know, how much care is given to the children. And, you know, some of them, you get there and, you know, some of them you know, they might need their uniform washing, or they've not had any lunch or any breakfast rather. But, you know, that not only are they teaching some of these children, they're caring for them, because, you know, they might be living in poverty and they might not have any food at home. It's really tragic, really, yeah. Really tragic. There's a wonderful school we worked at called Nine Maidens, just near Camborne, at the back of Camborne. It's like that weird Bermuda Triangle zone. Like you were
In the middle of nowhere.
And you're like, no way, this is actually quite near Falmouth, but quite near Camborne.
Yeah.
And
But also in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. And, you know, their deal is the boys and girls, but mostly boys, get there for the primary school and they have breakfast together. You know, they sit down, have a bowl of cereal, something to drink, and then start the day that way. You know, so, yeah, so we've gone off slightly off the corner topic, more socioeconomic topic.
But then that's the whole story that we've been, you know, that's the story that needs telling about Cornwall. I mean, I've worked in a local school, a local secondary school, and every single child has to be provided with a pencil case in order to sit their GCSEs or A-levels, because there is no guarantee that every single child has their own pen or pencil. Mm. And that is the nature of actual normal life in Cornwall, not second home life and not holiday life.
Yeah.
You know, the work that everyone we've discussed today, actually they are doing their utmost to tell that story.
Yeah. And I think with the Cornish caretakers, that one of the things I want to say to the kids is, you know, it might be tough now, but, you know, these Cornish characters, real life characters from history, they had it tough as well, but they went on to do amazing things. And, you know, just because you're from somewhere in Cornwall that might feel like the end of the earth, you can still go and do what you want to do and be what you want to be. I hope that message comes across for some of them, especially if they're having a tough time.
Yeah. And I think that the work that a lot of people who are from Cornwall nowadays is showing that that does happen, you know, that you can be from a tiny village in the west of Cornwall and produce, you know, amazing things. And Miraz Braz, Ed, thank you very, very much for all of your comments today. It's been really fascinating talking to you about all the work that you've done and all the work that is coming out of Cornwall in the creative sector.
No problem, my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Celtic Students Podcast. We are a student association that promotes the use and study in and of Irish, Scottish Gaelic, Manx, Welsh, Cornish and Breton. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Celtic Students, where you will find the latest news in Celtic studies, details of new podcast episodes and blog posts, as well as information regarding our annual conference. See you soon. Miraz Raglis Gosloris or podcast Studiorion Celtic. Coetha studiorion on me, never avons devnith has studians, the hawal, ibadonic, albanic, manoic, cembric, canuic, habretonic. Queer il agenholia will live a fast at Twitter, both Celtic students. In pile, queer il cavos and novel duetha, in keva studians o Celtic, manilion tauleno podcast, ha posto blog, ha kedlo in keva agen keskusilians bledinic, agas welles in scone.